is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Wall Street Journal reporting. The U.S. economy grew at a solid 2.9% annual rate last quarter, but entered this year with less momentum as rising interest rates and still high inflation weighed on demand. The October to December period capped a year of economic slowdown, with a growth of 1% in the fourth quarter of 2022 compared with a year earlier, down sharply from 5.7%. I stop the numbers and go to my guide on whether this is going in a good direction or a bad direction, Veronique Tourigy of the Mercatus Center. Veronique, you have written and you have spoken very carefully that the Federal Reserve, in order to return to price stability, needs to stay the course and raise interest rates, perhaps to 5, 5.5, and not be tempted by the Wall Street speakers or the Congress to slow down despite the unemployment that we see across the land. Now we're told more than in the tech sector. What is your measure of this GDP report? It's in the rearview mirror, but does it tell us we're moving in the right direction for the monetary policy? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, yeah, sadly, we're moving in the right direction because the economy is slowing down. I mean, as you mentioned, like massive layoffs in a lot of tech companies, but it's unclear that this is going to be enough. Now, while it's going in the right direction, the real risk, as you and I've talked about many times, is a political risk. Is the pressure under which the Federal Reserve is going to be to slow down increasing rates way too soon before inflation is tamed? I'm not too worried about the reduction in the scale of the rate increase, but I just want to see Chairman Powell, you know, continue. I mean, inflation is still, you know, north of 6%. I mean, this is still an enormous amount of inflation in the economy, and so he needs to continue. If he is just reducing the size of the rates, but is committed to continue going, you know, higher, ideally, that inflation itself, then it's fine. I worry that the pressure is going to become harder and harder as we go.
Congress likes to spend money, as you've guided me to understand. They spend money that's not theirs. They spend money that doesn't exist. They spend money that might never exist. You've written most recently about the new Republicans in Congress. That would be the House of Representatives. And one new Republican in the Senate. This is J.D. Vance of Ohio. You point to a tweet that he put out most recently about Social Security. Quote, "Under no circumstances should Republicans vote to cut a single penny from Medicare or Social Security." They like to spend money. J.D. Vance likes to spend money. Social Security and Medicare and the medical programs promised, aren't they the threat that eats the whole budget eventually?
Yes. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security are the drivers of our current and future debt. There's a pretty striking number that was put together by Brian Riedel showing that those three programs plus interest on the debt contributed to 86% and will contribute to 86% of the growth in spending between 2008 and 2032. 86%. And a vast majority of the spending and the borrowing going forward by Treasury is going to be to pay for those programs. The shortfall for Social Security and Medicare alone is over 30 years is $116 trillion. Basically, we have like, this is all the benefits that are not that, of course, the benefits are much higher than this, but that's the benefits that have, we don't even know how to pay for it. And it's just like, they are the driver of our debt. They should be at the center of every conversation about fiscal responsibility, but no one is interested in talking about fiscal responsibility. And more worrisome, the Republicans have long abandoned, you know, the like I mean, it's been a long time since President Bush was in office and tried to reform Social Security. But now the Republicans have even deserted trying to actually challenge Democrats when they make claims about the fact that we don't have to touch Social Security and Medicare, and they're even joining them.
Well, it would help us if we had an understanding of Social Security's excesses. One of those excesses is that it has an unusually low number for how long we're going to live. I have reason to believe that our children, Veronique, will live into their 11th or 12th decade. It's possible that we're looking at life expectancy continuing to accelerate given medical genius. Mm-hmm. The Congress knows this. They read the same magazines we do, and yet they won't acknowledge it. So if that idea doesn't work, how about means testing? How about saying that Social Security is for people without means, not for people with means? Is that possible?
Everything is possible if there's political will, but there's I don't think there is right now. That said, it is worth actually repeating that something that most people don't know, and yet it's true. When Social Security was created, seniors were overrepresented when they stopped working in the lower income quintile. You stop working, the capital markets weren't what they are today. You haven't saved your whole life. There was much less wealth at the time in the 30s, right, than they are right now. When you stopped working, you were poor, very likely. And so now this is not the case. Seniors are overrepresented in the top income quintile. Meanwhile, all the people who pay taxes all the time and basically pay taxes to transfer money to those relatively wealthy boomers and retirees, right, are overrepresented, especially the very young people, in the lower income quintile. So effectively what Social Security is an enormous transfer from the relatively young and poor in society to the relatively old and rich in society. And so it doesn't mean that there are no poor seniors, but if we actually move to a system that is not based on age, because as I said, it doesn't make any sense anymore. Age is not a sign of all of a sudden being poor. But if we move to a system that's based on needs, then you would have a lot of people kicked out of the rolls and it could help.
Your interpretation then of the Republican Congress coming in is that it's going to be even more defensive about Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid reform than the Democrats have been. Is that correct? We've got uniformity in Congress, a bipartisan issue.
Well, I don't know that they're going to be worse than the Democrats. Democrats not only don't want to touch it, but they would like to extend it. They would like to extend the benefits. I mean, the Democrats are even more in denial about they try to claim that the health of the program is such that we can actually extend the benefits, which is not true. We really need to reform it, and not just for the sake of the fact in 2033, I think CBO just came out with that number, when the trust fund dries out, what it means is the program is going to revert to a pay-as-you-go system. And it means that Social Security will not be allowed to pay benefits above what it collects in payroll taxes. And that means that roughly there will be between 21 and 25% of cut across the board. That's what it means. So if Congress does nothing, if we don't touch Social Security at the very least, basically what it means, you're going to be cutting benefits.
Veronique Duverger of the Mercatus Center, writing most recently about Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare, and the new member of the Senate from the state of Ohio says, don't touch Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid. Also, the course ahead for Jerome Powell, as Veronique will help me navigate this year. Will he stay the course? I'm John Batchelor.